The 18th Gene Key. The transformational path of the 18th Gene Key moves from judgment to perfection, and it's the path of integrity. This is a lovely Gene Key, this 18th Gene Key. At least I'm very drawn to it. But, you know, for no good reason. It's not in my profile. It's not even in my integral human design matrix. Nowhere do I have anything to do with this 18th Gene Key, and yet I do. And this is a great clue for anyone who's working with the Gene Keys. You can work with your profile and your golden path, and this is really essential. But in addition to this, make room for the Gene Keys to come into you in other ways, in mysterious ways. This one has done that with me. Because for a good 6 months now, my contemplation has been strongly flavored with the 18th city of perfection. I intuitively feel very drawn to this word and to this energy field. And my inner being loves to explore what it feels like. And along the way, I've also come to get to know its other sides, the shadow and the gift. And I see it everywhere in the world, and I see it in myself. So I hope you're also inspired by it, as I've been. Let's begin with the shadow of judgment. It's quite an obvious one. We all make judgments all the time. It's something that comes through our mind. Our mind picks up on our emotional responses, on our physical feelings, and then they create detailed judgments out of that. It's really intriguing. Anything out of your comfort zone leads to a judgment of one sort or another. And you know what it's based on? It's all based on the observation of flaws. That's the dilemma here. Judgment is based on the perceived notion of flaws, mistakes, errors. And this is interesting. And we can't really go there without including the city right from the beginning. The notion of perfection. Because the idea that the universe is not perfect is bred into us. The shadow believes it. The shadow swallows it, hook, line and sinker. So all we see here is the flaws in life. The shadow likes to find flaws. It has a knack of finding flaws. And you know when it really takes root? In our teenage years. From between the age of 14 to 21. And we're so riddled with insecurity that our mind learns to try and escape the flaws. You know, the flaws that our parents make every day, the flaws of our teachers, the flaws of our friends, the flaws of our enemies at school. And so the mind constructs a way of keeping the emotional insecurity in check. We fix ourselves into a fixed thought realm. It usually comes from the people we spend the most time with, our friends. And it may make you feel like a rebel, or it may make you feel like an outcast, or a conformist, or a non-conformist. But the point is, it freezes your mind. It fixes you mentally. And thus, it stops your mind from expanding naturally and freely. These Gene Keys are really quite amazing. They describe genetic processes of shutdown at every level. And so gradually, as we grow up as young adults, we fix the idea inside our minds that the world we're coming into is deeply flawed. It's really far from perfect. The 18th Gene Key is part of the codon ring of matter. And this collection of genetic markers determines the ways in which we all close down from experiencing the world as perfect. The 18th Gene Key governs the third 7-year cycle of imprinting, which is our mental imprinting. That's what in the golden path is called your IQ, when you look in your profile. So before our teens, we don't really make these kind of judgments, not in the same way. In our second 7-year cycle, from 8 to 14, we're really making emotional judgments. But that's a whole other ballgame. And in this 18th Gene Key, we're really talking about mental judgments. So think about what your life would be like without your mind making all these judgments. when you're just sunk into the inherent perfection of it all. You see, perfection isn't a judgment. It's a cellular knowing. We'll see what that looks like in a minute when we come to the city, but I just want you to know how this judgment game all got going, how it began. There are two main types of mental judgment here. There are judgments based on fear that come out of a defensive heart, a closed heart. And then there are judgments that come from an open heart. But we don't ordinarily refer to these as judgments. We call them wisdom. And both see flaws. But the first one becomes a victim of the flaw. Whereas the second version uses the flaws creatively. So if you have this 18th gene key in your profile or you're contemplating it in your life, think about all the things you consider as flaws. You have a gift for seeing flaws. And if that comes out through a shadow mentality, it's hell. You're forever seeing what's missing. And you're therefore driven by this misery. And you spend a lifetime chasing the flaws and trying to perfect them, eternally dissatisfied. And of course, you're going to judge yourself internally all the time for not being good enough. But when it comes to relationships, you're going to judge the other for not being good enough. And they're never, ever, ever going to meet your standards. So you can never, ever find a fulfilling relationship. Doesn't exist for you. Not through the shadow. Not until you see the pattern and you begin to work with it creatively. The Chinese name for this hexagram is work on what has been spoiled. Wonderful name. At first glance, might sound rather depressing, but on closer inspection is actually rather magical. Work on what has been spoiled. That means that you can find the flaws and you can use them as inspiration to serve the whole in some way. That's the gift. But the shadow is just what has been spoiled. There's no work. It's just a curse you carry everywhere you go. So look deeply into the mirror of your judgments. Consider what happened to your mind through your teenage years. Do the golden path. Do the Venus sequence. What mental compromises did you make that led to this acute habit of judging the world around you as flawed? And more importantly, what can you do about it now to open up that wonderful mind of yours again to the incredible possibilities that are latent in this gene key? The 18th gift, integrity. The problem with the shadow, the dilemma, is that unless you can train the lens of this gene key on your own behavior in a compassionate way, you're caught in the inevitable hypocrisy of the judging game. You remember Jesus calling out at the trial of the young woman who was threatened with death by stoning, "He that is without sin among you, let him cast the first stone." Remember that moment? Beautiful moment in the Gospels. A moment of integrity. You see, it's not so much that you as an individual have integrity, but that life has it. It's built into life. Look at the animal kingdom. You see no judgment. Every creature has its own integrity in the great web of life. Everything has its purpose, its role. Nature as a whole has a certain perfection to it. But humans don't yet see it that way. We're still evolving. So integrity also has a lot to do with morality. Not man-made morals, but moral fiber. The natural morality of a self-conscious human being. You know, most of us are really pretty unself-conscious. Especially in our relationships. That's where we revert. So integrity presupposes that we are developing an inner view. Because without an inner view, we're lost in the shadows. But as we evolve and as we begin to awaken, we begin to learn how to take responsibility for our own flaws. We may see the flaws of others, but instead of making them the focus, we train our laser sight on ourselves. And we enter a great paradoxical realm, the realm of self-improvement. And it's a paradox because our greater self can't be improved. It's already perfect, remember? But our lesser self definitely has some room for improvement. And so our inner journey through the gift begins. When we learn to use the flaws, our flaws, and the flaws of others, even the flaws of humanity, but to inspire us. To begin with, most of us give this an outer focus. We try and improve some part of the world in some way. We feel the drive to try and help, and this is a noble cause. But it's also kind of flawed. It's flawed because we can't really help the world until we've helped ourselves first. You know, this is often the advice given to disciples, especially Western ones, of some of the great realized teachers. And the question is, how can we help the planet if we don't do something? It's no good just sitting here meditating all the time. And you know, the master will respond. Always the same response. You don't know how to help the world until you are you. And right now, you're still just a victim of your own perception of the world's flaws. So we only really help. We only really enter into the field of integrity when we're no longer in reaction. Because our service can't come from anger. It must come from love, from wisdom, and from realization. You see, integrity has great calm inside it. It isn't showy or provocative. Integrity leads by example. That's its primary method. And because it's in the middle between the shadow and the city, it has roots in both. Integrity knows that underneath there's perfection, but it also acknowledges on the surface that there's work to be done. There are many improvements to be made that will greatly help others and the world as a whole. This is why the programming partner here is the 17th gift of farsightedness. Because integrity sees where things are eventually going. Life does evolve, although it does so sometimes by going back a few steps. Nonetheless, it still evolves. And knowing this, the being of integrity is relaxed deep inside. And that's where their power comes from. It comes because they're both in the game, but a part of their awareness is also resting outside the game. So this is a gift, this 18th gift, that loves a challenge, that comes to challenge all falsehood. But it does that not through pointing out what's wrong, but rather through adopting creative solutions that it's then ready to back up. Think about the teenage mind. Think about how elastic it is, how expansive it is. That's your mind. It was never intended to become stale or frozen or opinionated. Well, at a certain level it was intended, but you know what I mean. The point is that you can return to that openness once again, to that place of non-judgment. And then your inherent knack of finding flaws turns itself upon your own thinking. It's we who cause the problems. It's our very thinking. And then you begin to clean out your thinking. And this is an amazing process. It's the return of your true IQ. You know, a cleaned out mind is a rare thing. A mind with integrity has terrific power to serve the world. And this is what we really mean by genius. Your IQ expands as you reclaim your higher purpose in life. This is another meaning of integrity, to have a deep core stability, to be anchored firmly in a sense of inner purpose, and to have that feeling radiate through your posture, through your movement, through your presence. In the East, they call this mind the Yi, the wisdom mind. And it's a mind like water. It flows in harmony with the universe. It sees the perfection and the flaws, and it knows its role in beginning in bringing those flaws back into alignment with the greater perfection. This is the ring of matter. So this gene key has a deep mission to fulfill in the physical world. Integrity is about embodiment. It's also about having grit. That's hidden in the word. I like that. Integrity. It's gritty. It has real power to serve and improve the whole. And that role requires grit, because you're going to have to go against the grain. You're going to have to go against the shadow, against the naysayers, against the pessimists and the hypocrites, against the mass consciousness and the shadow. So yes, it's really a powerful gift, is this one, because you will really have to stand out from the crowd, which is the role of integrity, to be a model of harmony and beauty and inner strength, even when everything seems set against you. In fact, especially when everything seems set against you. The 18th city, perfection. Perfection. What on earth is it? Most people would say there's no such thing, or at least it's unattainable. That's not true. Every city is the realization of perfection. It is the embodiment of perfection, and it is absolutely attainable. It may be very rare, but it has been realized and it will continue to be realized. So what is it? Well, there's outer perfection and there's inner perfection. Let's do inner perfection first, because it's actually going to be easier to embrace for most people. Inner perfection is the realization that the world as it is right now in this very moment is utterly perfect. And this is not just an intellectual understanding. It's pervasive across the whole great span of your inner being. It's the culmination of the process of meditation or contemplation, the utter acceptance of what is in each and every moment. And at a mental level, it's the acceptance of your thinking process, but it also includes detachment. So you become a witness to your mind, and then your mind lets go and sinks back into the primordial source of being. And then you experience perfection, and every thought arises spontaneously out of that perfection. Emotionally, it's similar. Emotion as we know it ceases because detachment has saturated your inner life. So eventually all emotional patterns rooted in the past or in the mind or in desire also fall back into the root of the emotion, the still lake of being. And then the emotions that do arise tend to be higher emotions, ecstatic feelings, which are not really feelings at all. They're waves of bliss imbued with wisdom. So emotion and desire are purified at the city level. And then the perfection of love is experienced continuously. And this love is unconditional. So it includes what we once considered as ugly or flawed, but what now is perceived as perfect. And even the shadow and its behavior is experienced as perfect. And then there's the perfection of the physical form. The way it breathes, the way it moves, its rhythms and tempos, and its connection to everything that exists. The perfection of physicality is experienced as stillness and as boundless. You know, one form flows into the next, even though the awareness in each seems to make it feel separate. We tend to think of others as perfect, maybe Christ or Buddha. Maybe they're perfect, but we aren't. But actually, we are perfect right down to the core. And I know lots of people say this in the New Age, we're all perfect, it's all perfect. And they're right. But it also can be a mental thing. Usually, if you need to say it, then it is a mental thing. To embody it at all times, that is what is perfection. And not to embody it is also perfection. The city is always paradoxical like that. So perfection exists at a higher level of consciousness than humans currently can generally access. Perfection is found in the higher trinity. It's found in our causal body, in our buddhic body, in our atmic body. And these are the higher dimensions of our inner being. And our consciousness has to rise up into these levels. And these levels have to descend down into our form, into our emotional life, into our mental life. And this is the process of enlightenment. And the gift level, you see, the gift level isn't yet capable of perfection. It's into perfecting. It's expressing the yearning for perfection as creativity or service, but it hasn't yet realized it. There's a big difference between perfecting and perfection. In perfection, there is no more perfecting. Have you ever considered that? Striving, as we know it, has ceased. Seeking has come to an end. You've arrived. It's done. Life continues to evolve, but it evolves towards greater layers of perfection. Perfection within perfection. So how can this be, you ask? If perfection is attained, how can evolution continue? Because perfection is infinite. It's effervescent. It's life. It's a paradox. And what about outer perfection? We just looked at inner. How can there be an inner and outer anyway? Well, there aren't, but we're inside a city here, so anything goes. Whatever language we need, we're going to use. So when I talk about outer perfection, I mean the world out there. Can it ever be perfect? We know that from the enlightened consciousness, it already is. But it also kind of isn't, right? On the outside. I mean, we look at the world. It isn't perfect. There are legends. Legends of Eden. Legends of Shambhala. In the Celtic, they call it Tiernanog. The heavenly realms. Almost every global culture and mythology has references to heaven. To a perfect world beyond ours. In St. John's Revelation, he goes one further even. He talks of the coming of heaven to earth, the coming down of the New Jerusalem, he calls it. Other cultures also speak of this idea of the future Eden that will one day come to earth, that we will inherit. What is that? Is it just mad idealism? Well, from our current scientific materialistic perspective, it might seem, yes, it's idealism. But the world, because the world we live in today, it's in a hell of a state. At least it looks like it. But is it, really? There's a question. Is it? I want you to let this city really deep inside you, really blow your mind, because it should do. You know, a couple of inventions, and our world could look very, very different. An energy invention and a food invention, you know? Free energy from nuclear fission or something. And pure nutrition inside a pill. You know, those two things, and we're almost there. I mean, most of the battles here are about food and energy. And with energy solved, we can even move to places like Mars or the Moon. And then territory gets solved as well. So on the outside, these things are possible. They're even probable in the future. So maybe heaven on earth isn't as far away as we all think. And of course, the inner and the outer are intimately linked. They're interdependent. They aren't separate at all. The outer, in fact, follows the inner in terms of manifestation in time. So there's still one more dimension missing from this contemplation, and that's the coming together of the spiritual and the physical, of heaven and earth, of the mystical and the scientific, of the inner and the outer, of technology and consciousness. And you know, it's not the way some people think. I don't think so. It's not about cybernetic humans. It's about us realizing that we are the technology. Our vehicles are capable of a lot more than we realize. And that's where this inner revolution is going to take us, to the realm of the magical. That's where you're going to find perfection. I was reading this book recently about a Himalayan renunciate, Swami Rama. And he goes to see all these incredible masters over the course of his life. And one of them is this Baba, this weird wise man who everyone's afraid of. And he lives in this remote cave by the upper Ganges. And anytime someone comes near them, he shouts at them and kind of throws stones. But our renunciate, he goes to see him and he spends some days in his company. And so they're two renunciates together. They have a kind of understanding. And this man, this Baba, he has the extraordinary gift of transforming matter into energy and vice versa. And he's living on his own to perfect his art. That's why he pretends to scare people away. It's all a game. And he turns these pebbles into almonds. And he manifests all kinds of things like food out of rocks and fruit and things out of stones. And because of the rest of the book, you know by now that you're listening to an authentic voice. So you know that it's true. And the point is that we are the next technology to be developed. All we need is the inspiration. And this is going to happen. We have all these latent higher capacities. We have all these cities. And there's a big incarnation coming, and it's going to open up these pathways of magic, alchemy, and not just individually, but through the collective. And that's more powerful than we can possibly imagine. So there is this higher ideal at the core of our DNA. We call it Synarchy. And we're going to be its vehicles. And as it comes into the world, into the form, it will implement the principle of syntropy, generosity and service throughout humanity. The most efficient means of organization comes from being awake. Because when you're awake, you move in harmony with all that is. And then you embrace the miraculous. And when this same impulse becomes wisdom, it manifests through synthesis. The ability to see where everything and everyone are interconnected. And not just to see it, but to know it, remember. To embody it. That's powerful. So, I'm in the strange position of being a prophet and a realist. And I see what the world is today. I see the problems, the horrors, the hypocrisy. But I've also seen the future. I've remembered it. And it's perfection. And one day we will perfect our world. And it may well take a period of deep chaos before we get there. Because the shadow must be rooted out. It must be utterly transformed. But the future is a seed that lives in the present. That's the paradox. When Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is here now, he was right. He was absolutely right. It is here, but it's also coming. So see the perfection that's here now and see the perfection that's coming. One is imperfectly perfect and the other's completely perfect. But they're both truth because they can both be resonated now. And I know I'm really going out on a limb with this city, but I really, really want you to get this perfection. To hold both sides of the same coin inside yourself and live from that. That's truly to know what perfection is. It's flawless. That's quite a contemplation.